Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Josh Wheeler, 12 years of combination experience, backstep firefighter for Rutherford County Fire Rescue assigned to Station 60, Citizens First cadre instructor. Josh was going to school pursuing an education when he discovered the volunteer fire service. After a few years under his belt, as Josh states, he was hit by the bug and fell in love. Doing some homework, Josh found out that he could live his dream full-time by going career. With that notion, he applied and got on at a department in Kentucky, but wasn't truly feeling fulfilled. He left and got on in Rutherford County, where he truly felt his expectations were being met. Josh clearly states there's no ill will towards his former organization, but sometimes you have to step back, researching potential options, assessing cultural fit, and understanding the company's decision-making process. My favorite quote from him was, "Master the basic skill set to the point it looks advanced." With that, I present Josh Wheeler.
So my name is Josh Wheeler. I'm a first-generation fireman. I've been a fireman now for 12 years, which is absolutely insane to think about it and say. I work for Rutherford County Fire Rescue. I'm going on my third year there now, assigned to the Special Operations Center, Station 60. I don't necessarily have your traditional I've always wanted to be a fireman story. I started off going to school to be a counselor, which if you ask anyone who knows me now, that probably wouldn't have worked out too well. So I started off going to school to be a counselor, and that's where I was kind of introduced into the volunteer fire service. Started volunteering and got a few fires under my belt. And that's where the bug kind of bit me. And doing a little bit of homework with all the departments in the area, I found out really quick how much I loved it and that I could do this shit for a career, mm-hmm. which I really wasn't familiar with beforehand. I received my associate's degree and started going to school to get my EMT. Directly after that, I started working for the medical center EMS here in Bowling Green and applied absolutely everywhere. Started trying to get my name out there. Dude, I missed family vacations. I missed everything to try and get a job in the fire service. I was blessed. I got my first career job at an urban city fire department in mm-hmm. Kentucky, where I spent 6 years. A lot of good experience came out of that. During that period of time, that's whenever I was invited to join the Citizens First Fire Training cadre as an instructor. Shortly after that, they had this thing in Middle Tennessee called Light and Fight. And it's a free training opportunity. Anybody can go to it. You just go out there and burn all day long. And I struck up a conversation with Dustin Sinclair. And I had known him. This has been, I think, at that period of time, it was my third year going to Light and Fight. And so I knew him on a first-name basis pretty well. I started talking to him, and we kind of had similar experiences with the department that he came from and the department that I was currently at. And he started saying that he had just gotten hired on Rutherford County Fire Rescue, started telling me everything about that. I started doing some homework, started doing some research, watched their recruitment video, and I was like, this is the place that I want to be. I applied there, was lucky enough to get hired, and I've pretty much found home at Rutherford County now.
Okay. So, I heard you say the name, and I thought I was tripping myself, but you live in Kentucky, right?
I do.
And you drive to work in Tennessee.
I do. So
how far is your commute?
So it's about an hour and 20 minutes.
Oh, that's not bad.
It's in the morning. No, it's really not bad. And we also work at 4896. So it's not terrible at all. Now, coming home after a long tour, you hit all that Nashville traffic. An hour and 20 minutes turns into like 2.5 hours. Sometimes it'll take forever to get home, but on the interstate coming in, it's not bad at all.
Okay. All right. Any thoughts moving closer, or are you good where you're at?
My roots are here in Bowling Green. I love Bowling Green, and Rutherford County is such a massive county that there's guys who live in the county that have pretty much the exact same commute as I do living in Bowling Green.
Okay.
So it's pretty common at Rutherford County for guys to commute in. There's guys who almost live in Alabama that commute to work. So it's really not bad.
Okay. All right. So you started out as a volunteer, like all, you know, a lot of us, and like you, when I was a volunteer, I didn't really know about the career side until I was exposed to it. So you get on your first department and you have spent a good number of years there. Was it a hard decision to leave one department to start all over at Rutherford now?
It was a trying to think of the best way to say this. I loved all the guys that I worked with at my old department. With that said, the culture there, it just didn't fill my cup up. And that's the best way that I can describe it, that the department just didn't meet my expectations for what I wanted out of being a fireman. Not throwing shade at them in any way, shape, or form, it just wasn't the place for me. And going to transferring over to Rutherford County, finding, I guess, a group of like-minded guys, that meant more to me than anything. So it was a tough transition leaving the homies at my old department, of course, but it was an easy transition in the fact of the I want to be a fireman here. I get to be a fireman here.
Understood. Understood. And if you can, what advice could you give to? Because I'm sure there are plenty of guys and gals out there that are contemplating, because especially now where fire departments are so competitive, and you know, I think the fire service community is bringing back, you know, how like departments pretty much will recruit you and be like, these are our standards. I'm feeling a huge surge that firefighters or individuals are like, well, no, the departments also have to meet my standards. So, what's your advice that you can give out to anybody in your situation?
Man, that's a tough question. And that's as soon as someone figures that out, let me know. It's true. Like, let me know. And I will be sure to pass the word along. It's tough to jump ship because, like, for me, I'm a loyal person. I'm a very loyal person. Even so, it's kind of funny. Whenever I was hired at my old department, I told my chief that the very first place that gives me an offer, that's where I'll go, and that's where I'll be loyal to. And I feel like I've fulfilled that loyalty to them. But it's tough to jump ship because you always want to make something better. You always want to try and build the culture of your department. It's just tough whenever you experience so much kickback on trying to build that culture where it doesn't feel like you're making any headway on that. And to come into such a new department like Rutherford County, I mean, they just got paid in 2014. Before that, they were an all-volunteer department, so we're still new. Being able to transfer into something that everyone is so open-minded, everyone has the same mindset, and you can build something from the ground up. There's something to be said about that. But I think no one, I can't tell anyone that they need to leave their department. I can't do it. I think that answer can only be answered by that person. If that department isn't filling your cup up and you've tried to make good progress on changing culture and everything like that, then it sometimes the best thing to do is leave. And I'll also say that since I have left, sometimes you won't see the wins until after you're gone. Which is a big thing to hit on because I want absolutely nothing but the best for those guys. And they deserve it. They deserve absolutely nothing but the best. Since I've left, that department has started flourishing. And I can only pray that because, and I mean, we can deep dive into this. For the longest time, I was abrasive with trying to create change, and then you get kickback and you feel like you're not getting anything. You can turn into an abrasive person. So I can only pray that my level of abrasiveness or how I went about going to do things didn't counter-react what I was trying to do in my heart, if that makes sense.
It does. No, it does. There's people always talk about your tone level, how you bring things to the table, and I've
It
had to
matters
learn.
so much,
Yes,
dude.
I've had to learn the hard way as well. So I 100% get it, and it's one of those things. Change is a for some reason change does take a slow process when it comes to the fire service. Nothing
It
happens
does.
overnight. Nothing's immediate. But for the ones who truly love the job, like we want to see change fast. But for some reason, that's just not how it works.
You go to classes and you try and invest in yourself and you get all these awesome ideas and come back and it's kind of getting stabbed whenever all of those ideas are immediately shot down. But I can also understand that you go to classes and you get all these ideas that might not necessarily fit the needs of that particular department. So I don't know that over, especially over the last 3 years of being on Rutherford County, there's definitely been a growth in realizing that how I went about doing things there might not have been the best way to go about them. Yeah, it's a you learn, you grow.
No, that's it. That exactly right there. Like as you mature, you should, growth should be a part of that. Your mindset, how things start working. Like I think that if you have an individual that doesn't get that, well then unfortunately, I don't think they'll ever get anywhere. You have to be able, 'cause like I can look at myself back at what I used to do and it was like, yep, I was a dumb fucking teenager. I was a dumb young 20-year-old, and now it's like whenever I see somebody go on that route, I can go, hey, listen, if you want to take my advice, this I used to do that too, and it didn't work out really well for me. And here's a couple steps you could do. So I love it. I love that growth, that maturity.
Appreciate it. I appreciate it. It's taken a while.
It does that.
It's all through mistakes, dude.
Right,
All through
right.
mistakes.
Okay, all right. With that being said, how did becoming a cadre member with the Citizens First come about?
So it was just going through their classes. It was just going through. I think I went to two or three, prioritized the searches, and met Chris Kessinger. Met up with him, talked to him, kind of got to know the cadre as it was, and no one asked to be a part of Citizens First cadre, like you're asked to be a part of it. So seeing as like how it goes with me being a cadre member now, like we all get together, we throw a name around in the group chat, we vote. I mean, it's a vetted process on getting members onto that cadre. So I can only assume that that's probably what happened to me as well.
Okay. So with that being said, how were you exposed to outside training? Was it something that you stumbled upon, or was it a friend that told you about it?
No, so I got lucky. I within Warren County, Alvaton is one of the only volunteer fire departments that do their own recruit academy. And I'm not sure, I'm not a member there anymore. I'm not sure if it's still like that. But I went through their volunteer recruit academy, got a few fires under my belt, and I was like, oh man, like I felt comfortable in my skill set. And it was Kentucky State Fire School. Arthur Ashley was putting on a truck academy there. And with Alvaton, we had the only operating truck company in the county. So I thought, oh, okay, I want to be squared away in truck work. Ended up going to Kentucky State Fire School, took his class, and it was all the truckie talk, the old truckie talk cadre. And I learned quick that I didn't know shit. I had no idea what I was doing. And that really sparked a fire in me because I've always had a mindset that if I'm going to do something, I want to do it 100%. I don't want to half-ass anything. And that was a big dose of humility going in there and learning that I didn't know anything. So that's really what sparked it for me. And it was by happenstance that I got into that class or I selected that class. But since then, it's like a bug. It bites you. And I think it's super important to get outside the walls of your own department, because even if someone's viewpoints doesn't align with yours, it's important to hear those viewpoints, whether it be, okay, well, I need to mature, I need to grow, I need to adopt those viewpoints, or that I respect their opinion, but now this concretes even more what I feel, what my viewpoints are.
Okay. No, I love it. Love it. Because I was going to ask you, what's your advice on outside training, but you pretty much knocked it out the park. I mean,
Get out there, man.
I
Get
find it to
out there.
be, it's invaluable, man. Because for me, I go to it because as much as I would love to go to structure fires every day I'm at work, it just doesn't happen. So
Nope.
that's my outlet of being able to run those simulated structure fires under live fire, search with real victims. Things like that.
You have to fine-tune your basic skill set. Master the basic skill set to a point that it looks advanced. And I think outside training is massive in that goal. That some of the stuff is ba I know with Citizens First, with Prioritize the Search, the class that we teach, everything is bare bone basics. But I'm always surprised at how the basics look for each student. Excuse me. How the basics look for each student. A lot of them need a lot of fine tuning. And I think the fire service kind of does that to ourselves. We get a book and we read the book. We might go through the recruit academy, whatever. We get out on a truck and now we want to learn rope rescue. Now we want to learn trench. Now we want to learn confined space. Now we want to do all the cool guy things. But what makes you the best fireman you can possibly be is mastering those basics. I go to a lot more fires every year than I do rope rescues.
That's a fact. That's a fact. I couldn't have said it any better. And it's to me, I laugh as you were talking, I laughed internally because it's so true, man. We get these new guys, new gals that come in, and as soon as they get everything they need for the recruits, they're done. They go to their respective assignments, and then within a couple months, it's this specialized, hey, I want to go for this. I'm not saying that's wrong,
No,
but
not at all. It's part of my job. Like that's what I'm expected to do. I'm expected to be good at those things. But like I said, I mean, fires happen significantly more. And we have no help. Like who else are they going to call? If you're not good at the fire department aspect of your job, you got to be good at the basics. That's why I love them so much.
And it's to me it's invaluable. To some it's mundane that how many times can I pull this cross lay? And I start looking at it as okay, you can pull a cross lay and we go out there and we do it. All right, cool. You're doing it in an open lot, open field, open whatever, concrete pad. All right, you think you're good? All right, let's go to this apartment complex and let's park the truck next to a couple cars. Now, how's your stretch look like then? Because you're so used to doing it. And I'm not saying they can't, but you can do it when there's nothing around you. But what do you do when you have cars stacked up on you, or your setback is longer than normal? So I love it.
For sure. For sure. And that I'm sure we can talk about this later on down the road if you want to. But dude, helmet cams,
Yeah.
such an invaluable training opportunity. Such an invaluable training opportunity. I know I wear one. I know my captain at work wears one. There's a few other guys that wear them after every single fire, even during, well, even before that, during trainings. Like, that's how we figure out what we need to get better at. And now you wear it to fires. Now you've got actual game time footage. There's a reason why every single athlete from high school to the pros watches game time films. You're seeing exactly what you're doing in real time. After every single fire, we'll come back, we'll download the video to our phone, show everybody, but we'll go through and we'll critique. Down to the minutes, down to the seconds. Hey, dude, like that mask up, like probably need to work on that. That stretch, that was dirty. We need to clean that up a little bit. It's not always a pat on the back
That's right.
after those helmet cam videos. Like you've really got to look at it from a biased standpoint, or I'm sorry, a non-biased standpoint, and be humble with what those videos show, because you can say you're doing shit all you want to, but whenever you see it on video, it's like, no, okay, we need to clean that up a little bit.
No, and you're right. And another thing too is, don't only show the good parts. I have a helmet cam and I like to show parts where I messed up, because it's we're all human. We're all going to mess up. There's not one person that doesn't mess up. But the
For
thing about
sure.
it is, you learn from it and you progress to better yourself.
And like you said, those mundane tasks of like stretching cross legs, throwing ladders, drags, mask ups, like they seem silly and like guys get bored with them. But as soon as you correlate those skills back to previous fires or previous helmet cam footage, it kind of gives people a new perspective of, I said this was boring last week, but now I messed it up at this fire. So now it kind of forces them to get some buy-in on doing those what they would consider boring tasks.
Absolutely. Yes, sir. Okay. All right. Well, with that being said, I'd like to ask you your opinion. What does the term aggressive mean to you?
Ugh. All right. So I love this question. I love this question because we actually ask all laterals that come through our hiring process. We ask them this question. I was asked this question whenever I was hired. With that said, with how much that word gets thrown around in the fire service, if you ask 10 people, you're going to get 10 different definitions of what aggressive means. I think that there is doing the job to the level and expectation that the citizens expect. And I think there's not doing the job to that level. So it's not really a conversation about aggressiveness. It's just, I want to do the job that I swore an oath to do. So I think everyone sees the word aggressive as a bad word in the fire service, and we've kind of done that to ourselves in a sense, because we've classified, like, why is it aggressive firemanship? Why is it not just firemanship? That should be the level that you're held to. If you're doing the job correctly and doing it how the citizens expect you to do it, then it's going to be done aggressively. So what I can do is I can tell you what I feel is reckless is trying to do the job without the knowledge, experience, or training to get that job done. That's an easy one to answer. But as far as, so I guess aggressive would just be the opposite of that. Not being hesitant to use and apply the knowledge, skills, and training and experience you have towards the goal of search and extinguishment.
I love the answer. And you're totally right. It gets so many different terms, so many different definitions, but the way you put it, I have to agree with you. And yes, there's a distinct difference between aggressiveness and recklessness.
Absolutely. And but the only difference is training, knowledge, and experience. If you put all those together, so an analogy that I'll use. A surgeon, if I had a tumor or whatever, I would want that surgeon to be very aggressive with his treatment. Do you think the surgeon sees what he's doing as aggressive? No, he does it every single fucking day. That's his job. That's what I expect him to do. Now, if I go down the street and the first person I see, I hand a scalpel to him and say, "Hey, dude, like I want you, I've got a tumor. I want you to get aggressive with your treatment." Is that reckless or aggressive? Very reckless, right?
Right.
So I think that the middle line between recklessness and aggressiveness is being able to put the knowledge, training, and experience you have towards doing the job.
All right. So you're currently at a heavy or specialized station. You're at a specialty station with a rescue engine and a heavy
Heavy
rescue,
rescue.
correct?
Yep.
All right. So with that being said, what's your manpower at your station, and what skills are you guys pretty much required to do, minus the fire side?
Okay. Hot topic. All right. So as it sits right now, our minimum staffing on the heavy is two. We are looking at, so we have like a $1.2 million walk-in heavy rescue that's supposed to be delivered at some point. I don't know when. We're looking to increase that staffing to four. At least that's what I've been told. On the rescue engine, their minimum staffing is three. I would love to see four. I don't know if that will ever happen, but as it sits, two is the minimum on the heavy, three is the minimum on the rescue engine. As far as disciplines go, we're an all-hazard service. So, guys kind of gravitate towards what they're good at. I love ropes. I love collapse. But pretty much anything you can dream up, there's somebody there that will be squared away on that discipline. So we have drones, we have water rescue, we have collapse, trench, rope. It's definitely an all hazards service that they expect us to at least be a technician in.
Okay. All right. So you have three assigned on the rescue engine, two on the heavy. So you guys aren't what I call playing musical fire trucks. Everyone's on their distinctive apparatus.
Yes, so everyone is on their distinctive apparatus, and at the moment we're actually riding three and three. So
Okay.
we have three on the heavy, and three on the rescue engine. It just depends on like vacations, sick times, Kelly days, stuff like that, on what staffing you'll have. But everyone is assigned to that apparatus. We're
Okay.
not jumping back and forth.
Okay. And countywide response?
As far as the heavy goes,
Okay.
it is a countywide unit. Any fires, any pin-ins, anything specialized, the heavy gets sent to it.
And with you having such a massive district, I'm assuming some of your response times are lengthy.
We'll see you in 45 minutes. It seems to work out really well.
Okay.
And I don't know if like we've just kind of gotten lucky or what, but Now there has been some like 20-minute response times with us on the heavy. But there's like outlying areas of the districts that it seems like everybody is 20 minutes out. So we are building more stations. Right now we are at, which is this crazy too. Whenever I got hired on, we had three stations for this massive county, which was it was a crazy time. It was a fun time, but it was a crazy time. We've increased now to just in the going on 3 years that I've been on, we've increased to six stations, and now we are in the process of opening a seventh. So we're slowly starting to get in the direction of spreading those stations out a little bit more towards like the outlying areas of the county so they can have a good response time. Not there yet, but we're definitely getting there. It takes time.
No, and like we talked about earlier, nothing happens overnight.
No,
So,
not at all.
but you're definitely seeing progress with the years that you've been in there to pretty much doubling your station already, doubling the
Absolutely.
size. Okay. And with that being said, with you guys and gals having such a massive area, there is no room to hide, right? Like when you get a fire, your help is coming, but it's not immediate.
Everybody's working. And that is we take great pride in I can talk about Rutherford County all day long. It's been such a blessing to me. But we have great pride in firemanship there. We hold everyone to a very high standard on what we expect from them. And search and extinguishment happens at every single fire, and everyone is held to that standard. To be very, very, very good at those two things. But yeah, I mean, sometimes you'll be waiting on scene 15 minutes for help to show up. It's a very spread out county for sure.
Okay. And what kind of realistic training does your crew bring to the table, or what's something that you also have ideas that you bring to your crews?
So going back to like helmet cam footage, taking all of that and applying it to our training to make it as realistic as possible. The thing about it is all of it is on a very limited budget. And I think every department can say the same thing that like the training budget, like you're trying to keep it as small as possible, right? Especially whenever you're the one like putting on these trainings for your station. We have built in like wall props into doors for like Denver drill stuff, mask ups. We always hit very, very, very hard on mask ups, throwing ladders, getting out in the community and just looking at your first do. Which of course, with how spread out our stations are, there's always something to go look at. There's always unique challenges within the county. It's just trying to do more with less as far as realistic training goes. But I think a lot of people have in their mind that they have to have this massive training budget to master the basics. And that's really not the case. It can be done with little to no money, just time. That
Yeah.
that's the only thing it costs you is time.
Time and effort.
Yep.
But it is something that I sometimes think about, with most departments, that the training budget is the smallest budgeted item out of the
Ooh, now
entire fire department, man. Like
easy now.
I get it. You have payroll and apparatus and all that stuff, but like you would think, and I'm not saying that there aren't departments out there where I'm sure there are some chiefs and or training chiefs, training captains, fire chiefs that, hey, we're gonna put a little bit of extra money into our training budget, but it's kind of like shocking that if you go through the paperwork, that's the category that it has money, but it's not as much as you would expect.
I will say that I'm extremely blessed. We are extremely blessed on Rutherford. Everyone gets a training allotment every single year. I don't want to tell you wrong. I don't know exactly what that number is, but what I will say is that they're willing to meet you halfway. And I think that is so very important in today's fire service. They're willing to meet you halfway. I've not had to take a vacation day away from my family to go to any training that I've wanted to go to. They will give you time off if that's what's important to me is like time is money. I remember having to take so many vacation days, dude, to go to these trainings. And I always, in my heart, I always felt a little guilty about it because I want to invest in myself and I want to invest in the citizens that I serve. But I've got family, dude. So it's tough to, especially now that I have a kiddo. I just became a new dad in January. I'm not taking vacation time away from little man and my wife to go to these classes, but they're always willing to meet you halfway. So that's what's important to me. And any department out there taking note of this, if you're having your firemen take vacation time to go to these classes and invest in your department, and then you're expecting them to come out of pocket and pay for these classes, you're fucking up. You got to meet people halfway. They're trying to invest in your department and in your citizens. So that's just my that's Josh Wheeler's opinion on the matter.
And finding that balance, man, because that's the thing. When you want to get good at the job, it's just yeah, it's you have to balance. All right, I want to go to this class, but if I go to this class, then I'm gone for a couple of days, or I'm gone for a week from your significant other, your wife, things like that. So it is pretty wild.
It's tough, no doubt.
Another topic I have for you, recruitment and retention. What do you see the fire service doing good on, and what do you think that they can improve on when it comes to those two topics?
I think that there has been sort of a change in the way we hire. I think it's slowly starting to change into applicants being judged by heart and integrity and stuff like that, as opposed to it solely being education driven. I know that, whenever I started applying for departments, people had to be beat out the door, for these jobs. I remember sitting in rooms with hundreds of people trying to get a few positions. Now we're struggling to fill these seats. And something that I will give Rutherford County is we do not believe in putting asses in seats. And it's not been like that at all. We're not going to hire somebody just because we have an open position. We want the right person for the job, not a person for the job. I think as far as recruitment goes, we have to be very honest with people on what this job actually entails. There's so many citizens out there. How many times have you gone on a medical call and whoever you're going on the medical call for says, "What the hell are you guys doing here?" It's like the vast majority of people do not know everything that we do. And people applying for these jobs also really don't know what they're in for. So we have to be honest, whether that be like ride-alongs for applicants, that might be a possibility, or like a community Q&A session for applicants, just getting out all of this knowledge to them on, hey, you're applying for this job. It's not you go to a fire and then you're 10 toes up in a recliner until the next one. I think we really have to be honest and open about what this job is. I already said about hiring practices. getting away from education-based hiring and really looking at someone's heart, someone's integrity, someone's trustworthiness. I think that's going to, as long as you've got heart, I can teach you how to be a fireman. And I feel like the fire service is pretty good about skipping over some solid applicants and some solid people just solely based on, well, they didn't meet this prerequisite. They didn't meet this, they didn't meet that. I'm not saying to drop standards by any stretch of the imagination. That's not what I'm saying at all. All I'm saying is maybe we need to tweak exactly what we're looking for. And that's the reason I like the trades in general. That's the reason why plumbers, electricians, they're getting paid hundreds of thousands of dollars a year to do these trades because no one else really wants to do it.
That's right.
So if they're experiencing those problems, we're definitely experiencing those problems as well.
You mentioned that your department doesn't, and I love it. The fact that, just put asses in the seat, doesn't matter who it is, just hire them, put them on the truck. I've said this before in other interviews that I would rather ride short and actually have individuals that care for the job than an individual that's just coming in because, oh, the amount of days that I work a month is what attracted me here, or the pay, or for some it's, oh, I get to, wear the t-shirt, I get to look cool, but they just don't really care about the job.
So, talking about our hiring practices at Rutherford County, and I've once again I've got to brag on this department. I'm so proud of our department. But how our hiring process goes is we have a physical agility test. You apply, you come out, you take our physical agility test. It is a very challenging physical agility test. It is not the minimum standard as far as that goes. It's not the CPAT. It's not anything like that. It's very mentally and physically exhausting for sure. If you pass that physical agility test, you get an interview. Point blank, period. If you pass the physical agility test, you get an interview. You come in and you sit in front of a panel of firemen. That's it. You sit in front of a panel of firemen. There's no chiefs, there's no shift commanders. It's just a panel of, and there's also engineers included in that as well. But you sit in front of a panel of firemen, and you're judged based on your heart and what we feel is your willingness level to do this job. After that, we figure out exactly who we want to hire. We go to the chief and we hand him a piece of paper. And we say, this is who you'll hire. And he says, okay. And he makes the phone calls. That is how our hiring process goes. We are not influenced by any other outside factors other than we want the best people to do this job. Because at the end of the day, I've got to work with them.
Right.
So I don't, it doesn't matter about anything else other than, hey, I think this person would do good here.
Okay. I got a personal question, but it definitely relates to current events in the fire service. So you have a bachelor's, correct?
No, I have associates. I have
Okay, I'm
associates
sorry.
degrees. Yep.
You have an associate's. Either way, what's your take on education? And I ask that, all right, the way I'll ask it where you can understand what I'm saying is, do you think you need to have a bachelor's or an associate's if you're still riding on the rig compared to when you start moving up in the ranks? Because that's one of those things where now it's you need a certain number of credits or you need a degree and things like that. So what's your take on that?
So, man, that's tough. That's a tough one. I think getting a degree shows that you have the fortitude to dedicate yourself to something.
Okay.
Obviously, you have to, because I know I was ready. After 2 years of college, I was like, dude, this ain't for me. Like, I'm about to fail out. But I think it shows that you're willing to work towards something. So that's something that I take into account. Anyone that comes in, it's like, okay, well, he dedicated 4 years of his life to getting this done. Do I think you necessarily need a degree in order to further yourself? I'm gonna have to say no. I've got to say no, because I've worked with so many awesome people that have like an associate's degree, or just decided to get into this job. Now, with that said, if you are a chief, you might need the extra bit of knowledge and education to form those budgets and to communicate with the people in government and stuff like that. But man, as far as riding the back step, you don't need to know the Riemann hypothesis to get that done.
No, I'll agree with you. And like I said, it's your opinion, but since you have that education piece, it's always a topic because I've asked some guys and they're like, yes. And then some guys are like, no. But for me, I think like when you start, I think you maybe want to start looking at it when you get to the role of company officer in a sense
I
where
can see that.
you have to make sure you're writing emails and reports and you're documenting things correctly. Granted, with technology now, there's apps that you can type in what you want to type and then you put it in the and it reformulates it and it makes you look like Einstein. And it's like, hell yeah, brother, let's roll. But I feel like if you're on the truck, like there's I'm not saying the individual should do what they want to do, but for me, I don't see like that being a dead set requirement. Now, as you start moving up to battalion chief and higher, then I think that's when, especially when with chiefs, you got to deal with budgeting, numbers and things like that. And then you got to be able to articulate yourself to city council, town council, the board, all that. So that's where that all plays a factor in. But I have to wholeheartedly, I love your answer and I just wanted to ask you.
And it also, so what your degree in matters.
True, true.
And like I there's and I'm not throwing shade at any degree. Like that's not what I'm saying at all. But some degrees might not fit what the job ask of them. So in my opinion, once again, this is Josh Wheeler's opinion. If I don't have a degree and that department is like, hey, you need this in order to promote, throw somebody a bone and start helping them towards that education, to get exactly what they're looking for. So you can have more qualified applicants for those positions within your department. Help them out and start building them. It's exactly like fire classes. It's exactly like fire class. Start building them and start preparing them to be exactly what you want. So everything can be kept internal. You have more qualified applicants, and you also don't have somebody with a degree way out of left field. Does that make sense?
I'm laughing because it's true. Because like, oh, okay, I have such and such individual. They have a 4-year degree. Oh, what's it in? Business. Like, okay, in a sense, but then you can have somebody way out of left field. I have it in art. Okay, well, what does that have to do with the fire service? Absolutely
Just
nothing.
design me a station then, dude.
Okay. All right. I definitely want to hear your thoughts on this. The truck ladder culture, even if your department doesn't have one. And I want to say engine work is key. Like
Absolutely.
the engine company puts the fires out, and not all departments are fortunate to have an aerial device. So, with that being said, how can you bring that type of culture to your organization if you don't have one?
So we don't have one. We do not have, we have one on order. It's supposed to be here in, I don't know, like 10 or 15 years. But we have one on order, but at the moment we do not have an aerial device. The vast majority of the truck work, so anytime we arrive on scene, the vast majority of the truck work is assigned to the heavy rescue. But we also, it's not only assigned to the heavy rescue. If like we talked about earlier, if we're 20 minutes out, like there's so much shit that has to be completed on scene. Engine company fights the fire, truck company or assigned truck duties fights the conditions. It comes down to a mindset. And going back to Matt Atkins' episode, like, dude knocked it out of the park. But just to expand on it, I think it comes down to a mindset of how important these duties are. And I hate being a jack of all trades and a master of none. Especially like with the Quint concept and everything like that. True ladder trucks in today's time, there's very few cities that can adopt that a true truck concept. It's just you just can't do it. And it hurts my heart to say that because I would love to say like, hey, these guys, they ride an engine and they do engine work. These guys, they ride a ladder, they do truck work. It's just not possible, especially whenever you're starting to talk about like young departments and departments that are incredibly spread out and you've got a first due to protect. Everyone gets taught in the academy that search is the priority. Everyone gets taught that search is the priority. The fire going out is just a byproduct of that first line. Just a byproduct of that first line. That line is there to protect the search. That's kind of where I'm at with it. Just driving home the fact that if you do have an aerial apparatus and it's a Quint, you're arriving on scene to be a ladder company that also carries water. Not, hey, I'm an engine company with a ladder on top. You got to position like a truck. You got to perform truck duties. Of course, depending on arrival assignments, and stuff like that. If you arrive first due on a Quint and you start performing truck duties, that's going to be a very tough sell to the person whose shit is burning down. That's kind of where I'm at with it. Just try to make strides in if you are a ladder company or if you're assigned truck duties, work through those truck duties.
No, agreed, agreed. And yes, me and Matt, we had that discussion, but not every organization can ride a true truck. We're not Chicago, we're not FDNY. So, I would always see the comments and the arguments and the banter back and forth, and it's like, bro, what are some people's issues with Quints? Like, I get it. Sometimes you have some organizations that they have that mindset of, well, we're an engine with a ladder on top. And then so your ladder skills aren't up to par where they need to be. But like for me, I ride a Quint. We have a first due area where we have two crosslays. We have 300 gallons of water. So if we arrive first and a vehicle's on fire or whatever, we can start mitigating that. Would I love to do truck company work all the time? Absolutely. Is that reality? No. And I'm okay with it. I know that going in. And to me, you hit it on, you hit the nail on the head with it, where you have to remember. I love how you said position, not park. A lot of people tend to forget that the ladder has to be positioned. You can't just park it, because if you park it wrong, you can stretch hose all day long. I've never seen somebody stretch ladders.
Yep.
If you do, hey, show me what you got going on.
Yep, absolutely. So to ask you a question, just because we are starting to transition into a into getting this aerial device, I think what people's problem is with the Quint concept is it creates confusion. And that's kind of how I see it. With very strong like SOGs and stuff like that, I think that can be bypassed, and we're working through that process right now to try and get that concreted in, so we can choose the right people to put on this aerial apparatus that enjoy doing truck work. Like I don't want to put a guy who lives, breathes and eats engine work on this ladder company. Like I want the guys who enjoy doing truck work. But to ask you, what happens, like you arrive second due at a fire? Are you, is it booster backup, or are you doing truck work, or what's your thought process on that?
So I can tell you from my department right now, we're going through some what I would say really good talks right now. So contrary to what's out there, and that this is another hot topic, my department does blue card. Okay. Blue card
Okay.
is communications. It's not tactics, but some departments, some individuals feel like blue card is tactics. And if you're not careful, it can start heading that way. But what we're doing now is we have I have a captain on our downtown engine company. With his company, he has riding assignments.
I love it.
So what we're trying to do is we're trying to get riding assignments finalized, because unfortunately we've had we are a young department. We're hiring. We have an influx of new people. And sometimes when they get timed out is what I call, like, when you have to move to a different station, they get there and nobody tells them what their role is. And so when you have those new people that were like with Captain Smith, that's his name, with Captain Smith's crew, he every day the firefighters know what they're doing. So when they go to a station and it's kind of like a free for all, or we'll figure it out when we get there, they're kind of left confused because they're not used to it. So we're working on writing assignments, and we're trying to then start shifting our culture to where, like, we can get that truck mindset going.
Yep.
Granted, we had an incident last year where we had a fire in our first due, over 2,000 square foot house, heavy fire involvement in the garage. We arrived first and we started engine work. Okay. Looking back, my captain, and Captain Smith's crew, we've kind of come to that agreement on a shift where if that happens again and the engine's right behind us, like if my captain looks at our CAD program and sees the engine's right behind us, we are immediately going to do engine work, and or I'm sorry, we're immediately going to do truck work and let the engine do engine work. If they're right behind us, it's a no-brainer. Let us start the search. Let us throw ladders for means of egress while the engine does what they're supposed to do. But if not every case is going to be like that. So if we pull up, like you said, I'm not going to go, all right, we're doing a search and we got heavy fire involvement or a room and contents, and we're just going to let that grow or go. No. And I understand the confusion part, but I think if your department has, I don't want to say if your department, I want to say if your crew has like game plans. All right, this is plan A, plan B, plan C, plan D. Like, for, I think that would help smooth the transition. Like for me, when I go back to work Wednesday, if we roll up first due and there's not an engine close, a line's going to be stretched. My driver hopefully will get a water supply, or if not, somebody's going to stop at the hydrant because we only got 300 gallons. We got to be smart. You can only do so much with what you got. And I can tell you, our truck, 300 gallons, flowing our 1¾-inch, 200-foot cross lake. Water lasts a minute and 45. You should be able to put some good fire out in a minute and 45, but you don't want to be up Schitt's Creek where it's too much heavy fire involvement and you don't have a water supply and you're looking, oh shit, what do we do now? So I think the companies have to come together and get these game plans in order.
Hopefully it's going to be a little bit easier on us. It's going to be I hope for an easy transition. Because as it sits right now, like we have engine companies that do truck work.
Right.
So it's with us getting our very first aerial apparatus, it's like, what's the difference? other than trying to establish that truck culture of, hey, now you're a little less of a jack of all trades. Like you still have the possibility of being a jack of all trades,
Right.
but we want you to focus on being super squared away with truck work. I'm hoping for an easy transition. It's just I still have questions, if that makes sense.
Well, I think too, when you get that aerial device, wherever they put it, that's going to be something that they need to
Yep.
think about.
Absolutely.
And okay, the aerial's coming, but it's still a little bit ways out. With your situation, you kind of have to be the jack of all trades until you start getting more aerial devices where you can go, okay, we're going to solely focus on this. So I get it. Like, nobody wants to ride a truck that you have to multitask your duties, but in today's fire service, your geographical landscape to me dictates that. And if
Absolutely.
that's what you got to do, then hell, be a jack of all trades. Hey, engine two, for example, upon your arrival, I'm gonna need you to get to the roof and cut a hole. It's got to be done. We can't look at that citizen and go, listen, I ride this thing called an engine. We don't do this thing called roof work. Like you. Like you said earlier, they expect professionals showing up. Unfortunately, sometimes that's what we got to do.
I did. You hit the nail on the head on where we decide to put this thing. And that's something else that I've been thinking a lot about. And not to cause an argument or anything like that within the organization, I would absolutely love, and I might be a little biased because I do love truck work, but I would love to house the heavy rescue and the ladder. I would
Okay.
love to. So where we are stationed, we are the most centrally located station in the city. So we do not necessarily get we now we'll get car fires on the interstate. That's where Quint would be awesome. Quint would be awesome. But we're not getting very many first due fires that we're not beat to
Right.
already. We're already the vast majority of the time we'll be second or third due to those fires. That would be awesome for the ladder company because now we get to do truck work. Now it takes that question completely out of the game plan. You put that truck up north or on the east side where they experience more first due fires, now you're going to kind of handcuff that company into using that apparatus as more of an engine.
And you know, like we said, it's all about formulating a game plan, getting with the crews, you know, th things of that nature. So when you do get your truck, what's your if you know what's your staffing going to be? Is it going to be two, three?
That's also going to be a question. I know. We on anything else, we're not going to drop minimum staffing under three. I would love to see four. So three is pretty guaranteed, I would say, just because they're with the heavy rescue that's coming in, with it being a specialized unit, they're wanting to look at four. I can only assume they're wanting to do the same for the ladder company. But minimum of three is a very, very safe bet.
Okay. And you know, with the truck you ride, you know, you're on a rescue truck where a lot of rescues essentially do truck work as well
Absolutely.
when they arrive on scene. So
Absolutely.
it's nothing for you to get on scene with the rescue. Hey, we need a vent hole cut, and it's done immediately.
We don't carry any water or anything like that on the heavy. So it's the vast majority of duties that we're going to fill on the fire ground is truck work, search.
And you know, like we stated earlier, I think at the end of the day, it all goes back to the organization's needs. You know,
Yes.
I would love to do, which I think we're working towards that with the way our area is, but I also feel like having a ladder truck with water isn't such a bad thing because, you know, to me, we are in the what if business. And you hear people say, what if this, what if that? And some
Yep.
people say, well, that's crazy. But I think it's 100% true. What if you have a call where a couple engine companies are on this and then you get
And it's
dispatched to
super possible.
this? Yeah. And the ladder arrives first, your next closest ladder or your next closest engine is 10 minutes out and you have water on that truck. Stretch the hose and put the fire out. Once the fire goes out, problems, you know what I mean? But then after you put it out, then immediately shift. Hey, let's get a search done. Like, it's just I don't understand that banter that we do where it's like, oh, Quint's ill. It works for the specific organization. So if it works for them and the fire goes out and the search is still completed or the holes are still being cut, what's the problem?
I think there's definitely a sense of pride that goes into that. You think that there's I don't know. Like it, if a search is knocked out before we get there, I'm like, well, shit. Like,
Right.
I wanted to do that,
Right.
or getting a hole cut in the roof, or anything like that. There's definitely a sense of pride of, hey, that's my job. I want to do it, and then it gets taken away by someone who's not riding a ladder company or a heavy rescue or something like that. And it's the same way with engine work. Like
Right.
the my greatest guilty pleasure is still in the nozzle, so it's there's just a there's definitely a sense of pride that goes
No,
into it as well.
I agree with that. I agree with that. But you know, I'll also push it a little further. So, you know, if we're trying to say it's apparatus based dependent, so does that mean if an engine company arrives on scene, they don't force the door? Because technically that's truck work.
100%.
You know what I mean? Like
I'm with you. I'm with you.
we have to, like you mentioned earlier, the basics, right? Forcing doors, stretching lines. Throwing ladders, search, ventilation to me. If you can get those basics down, then you can be that jack of all trades department where, hey, if the ladder's available and the ladder comes in second, all right, assign the ladder work. But if it's a crazy call or it's a mix or these companies are tied up here and the ladder has to make the stretch, well, then the ladder makes the stretch. Like, maybe it's the fire service. We'd like to argue and fight, but I'll read these comments or I'll see these trucks that are designed and someone's like, ew, it's got a tank on it. I'm like, well, maybe they need a tank for their area. Like, you don't know, each department has their own needs.
The only thing that I will say is if you're going to spec out a ladder truck, in my opinion, it should be spec'd out with the thought process of truck work.
Yes, yes.
That's the only thing that that's the only nuance that I'll throw in there is if you're going to spec out a $1 million truck, I don't even know how much they go for, but if you're going to spec that truck out, spec it with the mindset of truck work as opposed to making it a very, very, very expensive engine.
Yes. Yeah. No, I agree 100%. Make sure it has a decent complement of ground ladders,
For sure.
you know, plenty of room for saws and fans and things like that. If you have if you do extrication, like yes, definitely be thoughtful, be mindful, like you said about it. Don't design a ladder and it has more compartments and things for like engine. Like that's where the confusion and I'm sure that's where that confusion comes from. With individuals seeing your ladder truck is a lot of equipment that an engine would have, and then it causes that ruckus. So I get it. And for me personally, if you're going to have a ladder truck, make sure it's got a 28 on it, not a 24.
Yes.
Not
Yes.
a 28.
I love 28s. Oh, man, engines need 28s.
And you know what? I've seen some engines that are starting to spec
Yep.
with 28s on it. 24 is cool. If you have to have an engine with a 24 foot, I get it. To me, that's fine. But to me, ladders now, the minimum shouldn't be 24. It's got have some 28s on there.
Yep. Cobb County
Yes.
is big on 28s. Whenever I taught at MAFSE last year, and I was talking to some Cobb County guys, and they were like, "We don't have 24s. Like everything is 28s." I was like, "Hell yeah, I love it."
Definitely, definitely. With you mentioning that you instruct, so I'm going to ask you, what's your niche? What do you like to teach?
So, what I teach the very most is ladders. I love ladders, but even to expand on that, like we talked about earlier, it's just the basics, man. I love the bare bone basics. Whether that's teaching flowing and moving, whether that's see, I loved Aaron Field's class. I don't I just had a brain fart.
It's all good. It happens to me all the time.
I just lost where I'm at. But overall it's just the basics. But as far as teaching with Citizens First, the vast majority of what I teach is either going to be ladders or a search.
Okay. So I'm going to throw you a couple personal questions.
Yeah.
28 foot ladders, you think that should be thrown single man or tag
Single,
team?
all day, every
Okay.
day. 24s, 28s, single person ladders.
All right.
24s, what is it? 74 pounds for a duo safety. 28s, especially if they're duo safety. Now, what I will say is those Alkalites or the Alka heavies,
They light. Ain't nothing light about them bitches.
it's very possible it all comes down to technique, but those 28 Alkalites are heavy as fuck.
Yep.
If you are going to spec out ladders, please spec out duo safety. Please spec out duo safety. And something else that I found out is we were trying to. So whenever I got hired on, we had Alkalites. We still have a lot of Alkalites, but they're 24s. They're not bad. The difference between the 24 Alkalites and the 24 duo safeties really isn't much. The only thing that sucks is that channel that digs into your shoulder.
Yes.
But we finally got the administration to start buying some duo safety ladders, and we tried to put them in the rescue engine, and they don't fit within those channels. So the beam width is a little bit thinner on an Alkalite ladder as opposed to duo safety.
Okay. What are your thoughts on? So for me, with practicing this, we have dual safety 35s. We have two. So I have tried with
Two
my
or three section.
stature,
Okay.
two section 35. I have tried to single man throw shoulder throw it, and like it. I guess I rubbed my, and I had a coat on when I was trying it, but I guess I had rubbed enough material where like I actually cut my shoulder through the gear. I don't know how that, like I had like a bad rug burn or whatever trying to shoulder throw it. But I will say I can still take it off the truck, suitcase carry it, easily transition it to my leg and throw it up. So I tell people, I'm not saying you have to be able to do that single man or woman, but my thought process is it's good with the 35 to have a team put it up, but what happens if there's no team? You need to throw it up. Like, so I tell people, if you want to use two people, cool, but I can do it single person. There's a technique. So what's your thoughts on that?
So the issue with a 2 section 35 is not its weight, it's its bedded length.
Yes.
It makes it super awkward to hit that initial point of that like turnover to get that ladder up. So it's not really a weight issue. Now, what I will say is I can throw a 3 section duo safety 35 significantly easier than I can throw a 2 section duo safety 35 just because it has a shorter bedded length. The weight is a little bit more, but with it being a shorter bedded length, I can get that initial pop up off my shoulder instead of like the butt spurs doing like the little skippies. Like
Yes, sir.
I can get that initial pop up off of my shoulder with a 3 section a lot more than a 2 section. Something that I will say is it's super Gucci to be able to throw a 3 section duo by yourself. Like everyone's like, oh, like 133 pounds, like that dude gets it. On a real fire, I want to utilize the manpower that I have. And I want everyone to still be able to have gas in the tank whenever we get that ladder up.
Boom.
If we can utilize two people to do that job, then I'm going to absolutely utilize two people to do that job. Sometimes you got to call an audible. Sometimes you'll need multiple ladders, this, that, or the other. But on a normalized operation, I would feel more secure using that 35 being a two-man operation, so we can all still have gas in the tank. Because, dude, especially with Rutherford County setbacks, you're going to be carrying that ladder forever. So it's going to be easier to divide that workload up, if that makes sense.
Absolutely, 100%, man. Like I said, I was just asking your thoughts and opinions. I'm imagining I probably don't have the setbacks that you do in your county, and I can imagine having a single man suitcase carry a 35 a huge distance. So I 100% get it. But I also want firefighters to understand too, like, we teach and we preach teamwork. And yes, teamwork should play a role, but I'm always thinking, what if all hands are truly working and you got to be able to get that ladder, whether it's a 28 or a 24, 25, practice doing these things by yourself sometimes too.
Yeah. And also not to discount, like even the old ways of like, oh, throw the butt up against the building and raise it. Like whenever you're talking about 35s, like not everyone can plant, especially if you're talking about concrete, dude. Like not everybody can bully that ladder up on concrete. So you might have to call an audible on exactly how you're throwing that ladder, whether you throw it up against the building and raise it like that and do it like the old school way of doing things. Just get the ladder up. Don't handcuff yourself to thinking, okay, well, I need to high shoulder carry this because this one dude on Instagram made it look super easy. Just be able to call audibles on your playbook, especially like whenever shit hits the fan, like what you're talking about.
Absolutely. Absolutely love it, man. No, you're 100% right. Because that's where I never knew you could shoulder throw it until I saw a dude do it. And I'm like, oh, fuck yeah, I gotta try it. And then I tried and I was like, oh, no, that's not gonna work for me. I gotta come up with a different way.
Dude, you want to see something funny? And I think I actually commented on your Facebook post of yours a while back. What was it, like a 20-foot straight ladder?
Oh yeah, we have a 20. I can throw
I
that thing
hate
on
them.
concrete.
I hate them.
They are very long, but you see, that's the thing. Like,
They're so long.
whenever I get asked or I need to teach someone new, I'll be like, "Oh, have you ever been on a ladder truck? No? Okay, cool. We're gonna go throw some ladders." And then we start with we got a 16-foot, and they're like, "Oh yeah." And then I'll skip to 20, and I'll be like, "We got a 28," and they're like, "Oh." But they'll wait it. They'll be like, "Oh, it's not that bad." And I'm like, "Yeah, we're good." And then we do the 2 section 35 together. And then I go, "Oh, this 20?" I was like, "Man, you got this." And they're like, "Oh, it's a 20, yeah." They'll pull that thing out, and then
It just
that
keeps
thing will
going and
whoop
going and
their
going.
ass. And they're like, "I don't get it." And then I'll grab it and I'll be like, "Hold on." And bloop, and they're like, How do you do that? Practice and technique, but it is a super long ladder.
So if you can throw a 14, you can throw a 24. Like the weight distribution on those ladders are so nice that if you can throw a 16, you can throw a 28. Man, those 20s, that those 20s will make me look like a fool real quick. And I have zero reservations about saying that. It'll get you because you pick it up and it's like, oh, this is so light. This is going to be so easy to throw. And then you drop a ladder on your head.
It doesn't help if you're a little short,
Oh, yeah.
then you gotta overcome that too. There's a and I tell people there's tech find your body mechanics, how your body works best for you, and figure out a
Sure.
way.
Yep. Now, I love
Okay.
teaching ladders. I'm not going to try and teach nobody a 20-foot straight ladder. We're just going to keep that ladder to the side. And y'all can look at it.
I always like to ask the guests of the last question here. Where would you like to see yourself? I don't want to say retire because I'm imagining you've got a lot of time left, but
Oh, yeah.
down the line, where would you like to see yourself within your department in the fire service?
Man, that's a tough one too. I like to say that I'm gonna ride the back end until the day that I retire, but that's not gonna happen. Because I want to make room for young guns coming in, and I think it's important. It's important to promote. It is important to promote. But I want to promote at the time that one, I feel like I'm ready for it. And that's the biggest thing. Like I want to feel like that I'm truly ready for that position. As far as later on down the road, I would love to be a company officer. I would love to be a company officer. Whether I get to make it to shift commander or not, that's definitely I'm open to the possibilities on that one day. Time will tell. Time will tell. I'm kind of living in this season right now, with where I'm at. I'm so happy with where I'm at. Another thing is I've got to make it through engineer before I can promote to a company officer, and that's going to be a tough call. One day to go from backstepping, having all the fun in the world, to now your ass better not leave that pump panel. So I don't know. We'll see. I would say I would be very, very, very comfortable with retiring as a company officer or retiring as a shift commander.
Now, too, if when you get promoted to that engineer role, man, you don't always have to stay behind that pump panel. Once you
Oh
get that
no.
line set, that water supply secure, hell, man, it's free for all now. Like,
Oh
I'm gonna go throw some ladders.
and they're super big with driving that home on at RCFR. We definitely have working engineers. We definitely have working engineers. Once they get that pressure set and once everything is squared away on the panel, they're throwing ladders. They're getting tools staged. They're doing this, they're doing that. So I mean, it's not a and like if you're third dude, the engineer's putting gear on and working with the rest of his crew. So I love giving engineers a hard time. I do. I love riding the back step. I really do. I feel like especially with where I'm working now, like some people feel that they have to promote to have an opinion on things within their organization. And I'm blessed to say that we're really not like that. Like everyone's opinion is truly valued, especially now having the opportunity to be on the training committee and the training cadre. And I've been on the interview panel a few times with the hiring process. I just don't necessarily feel the need to promote. I feel like other people are are ready and willing to promote until I hit the point that I wouldn't want to work under someone else, or there's no other options. That's when I might start looking at it.
Okay. No, I love it. I love your answer, man. Like I said, it's your it's there's not a definite right answer. It's all on the individual. And I love the fact that you hit right now, you're having the time of your life. Like for me, I didn't promote. I was a firefighter for 15 years. I didn't promote till after year 15 to relief driver. And now I am trying to get to the role of lieutenant. So everything changes in life, different seasons. Like you said, you're a dad now, you know, you got more responsibilities. And I'll never say that money should be a factor, but in this day and age, sometimes it's like, hey, do you have that experience and that time under your belt in a specific position? Yes. All right. I feel confident myself to move up. So with move up comes a pay raise, which should be expected because it's more responsibility. But to me, I cannot stand those individuals that, hey, why do you want to be a captain or a lieutenant or sergeant? Oh man, that money. Like if your first answer is money or not trying to change the culture, better the department, then you're in it for the wrong reasons. And I'm not saying you are, but I
A
love your answer.
thousand percent, 1,000%. I feel the exact same way. There's so much responsibility that comes along with being a company officer, and they deserve the raise. Like
Absolutely.
they absolutely deserve the raise. But there's m so much more to it than that. I'm right there with you.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Josh, I really appreciate you coming on, man. I know when I hit you up, you said it earlier, you felt like you were being punked, and I'm not trying, I wasn't punking anybody. Like there's a reason, you know, how people talk to you or how people talk about you on social media, the little videos and clips that I've seen, you're definitely all in. You love the job and your passion, the way you talk about it shows. So I just want to say thank you for coming on. Thank you for trusting me. I wasn't a scammer. This wasn't spam. Like, I'm glad that we were able to make this happen.
For sure. I can't begin to tell you how much I appreciate this. This is way out of the norm for me. This is first time I've ever done a podcast like this, but you've made it super chill. I appreciate you for that.
Awesome. Like I told you, see, I told you before we
You
recorded.
did. You did. You
It's
did.
like,
You
man,
absolutely did.
it's just gonna be a little one-on-one conversation, two dudes that love the fire service, and yeah, we're just, you know, chopping it up, talking shop.
And I appreciate you more than you know. Thank
Yes,
you for this
sir.
opportunity.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.